Welcome to The Mother-Daughter Journey, a podcast for women working through the tenuous transition of a maturing mother-daughter relationship. I'm Abigail.
And I'm Kelly. We know firsthand that the mother-daughter relationship is one of the most fabulous,
yet frustrating,
relationships you are ever going to have. Even so, we're best friends, business partners, and of course, mother and daughter.
So join us as we share our ongoing journey and the lessons we've learned along the way. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Mother-Daughter Journey.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back.
Today, we have a very, very special guest with us, and I am so excited and so thankful. Take
Absolutely.
It away.
We have Lisa Johnson with us from Been There, Gut Out, and I'm actually going to let her talk about her business a little bit before we get down into, you know, the interviews and the conversation. So Lisa, why don't you introduce yourself for us?
Okay. So I always say I have this really weird career that nobody ever dreams of doing when they're a little kid. So I am a high conflict divorce coach and strategist. And like Kelly and Abigail said, my company's called Been There, Got Out. I'm the female half, and I'm a state certified domestic violence advocate. My partner, Chris, is the male half, and he's a certified high conflict divorce coach. And together we help people getting out of toxic relationships, dealing with high conflict separations and divorce, custody battles, and co-parenting hell have the chance of the best outcome in family court and beyond. And I am not an attorney, but I have been in the legal system. This is now year 10, though things kind of settled a lot last year. In court, I have been successfully representing myself for 6 years and been to court, I always say, about 100 times in these past few years in 2 states and have consistently prevailed. But it takes forever for justice to be served. And it now is being served very nicely, finally.
Glad to hear
and
that.
Yeah. And the amazing thing is that after all of this, my case is now published in the Connecticut Law Journal, which means it's case law, which is like a really big honor for any attorney. And it's unheard of for a non-attorney. So I always say how proud I am of that. I like toot my own horn.
Absolutely. And then toot away. That's so cool.
Yeah. And then I also submitted live testimony for something called Jennifer's Law, which passed and made Connecticut the third state to effectively expand its legal definition of domestic violence to include something called coercive control, like all that invisible abuse that people often don't take as seriously, but is very, very serious. And then my ex decided to sue us for $4 million in defamation in civil court because these people just don't stop. Mm-hmm. Took a few months, but luckily Chris and I got that thrown out. And then last year, we say our first baby was born. Our first book came out. It's called Been There, Got Out, Toxic Relationships, High Conflict Divorce, and How to Stay Sane Under Insane Circumstances. And now we're working on the next one, which has to do with how to handle when your ex is trying to turn the kids against you in court and in life, since that seems to be one of the biggest concerns in our community. So sorry if that introduction took too long,
but
that's
perfect.
What we're about.
Nope, it's perfect. And it actually leads into the kind of things that we would like to talk to you about, which is this next book and something that we didn't think about until we were introduced to you
by one of
our previous guests, Parenting Connection, Calissa and Joe.
Well, and it's kind of what you were just saying, Lisa, too, or at the beginning of this, when you were like, oh, I do something that nobody ever dreamed of doing as a kid. This is not a subject that we ever
dreamed that we'd be talking about dreamed that we'd, well, right?
Right, and so, it's because it's not our lived experience. So super, super, I mean, not happy that it has been your lived experience, but grateful that you have been able to come out on the other side. And now you are helping guide others through that.
Right.
And very thankful for Clarissa to putting us in each other's paths, because this is absolutely something, you are absolutely somebody who can help our listeners as well.
Exactly.
We just didn't know.
Yeah, we all can really help our shared community, I'm sure.
Yeah. So as I was saying, it's something that we didn't actually think about in the past. We talk about the relationship with the mother-daughter, but because we haven't lived divorce, we didn't think about the impact that makes on the relationships, the parental relationships, and the games that take place, kind of weaponizing your children and all of that. So what would you say are the most common kind of themes that are coming at you from your community when it comes to their children, specifically with our age group, their teen and young adults?
Okay. So we often talk about how divorce or separation is part one, and then there's something called post-separation abuse. So Chris and I have in the past really focused in on the legal abuse, but part of legal abuse, like we said, is people weaponize not just the court system, but children. And so when we talk about post-separation abuse, we say there's really three ways that they still continue this abuse since they don't have the day-to-day anymore: money, kids, and the courts. And like I said, money and courts go hand in hand, but kids last the longest and tend to be the most painful. So when a difficult person, we're whatever diagnosis you can imagine, but usually somebody who has some kind of personality disorder, when they separate from a marriage or some kind of significant romantic relationship, it triggers feelings of abandonment in them, which is really, really hard for them. And they don't want to deal with that. So instead of dealing with the fact that they were a failure in that relationship because, you know, it didn't work out, not that it's all their fault, but there's reasons why relationships fall apart. But in their mind, they're a failure and they can't deal with it because that's too painful. So that turns into some kind of rage. And so the main goal has to be that they are the victim and you are the villain. Because to think otherwise, then they have to think about their role in the demise of the relationship. Right. So they will scorch the earth to destroy their partner. And in the process, they will harm the kids, like blow through bank accounts. Like there's no sense of the future and consequences and the impact it'll have on everybody because they're just so upset. And everything is about keeping up the appearance because to them, it's like, I had this perfect life with you. Like we looked really great together, this happy home. And now it's your fault that I don't have that anymore. So I'm going to take you down. I'm going to conduct smear campaigns, you know, tell other people terrible things about you, destroy your reputation, like all that stuff. But the kids are in the middle of all this. And so what happens with the kids is they will create something called loyalty conflicts. And it's that same all or nothing, black and white thinking. So kid, whatever age you are, let's say a teenager, if you love me, then you need to reject or discard or hate your other parent. It's one or the other. You can't be, you're with me or you're against me. And so that's the situation that a lot of, you know, because we're talking about teenagers.
With right,
you
guys, right.
A lot of teenagers are caught within and they don't know what to do, of course. And teenagers are also establishing their identities. One interesting thing, it's kind of a myth. People think that it's better to wait till kids are older to get a divorce. They're like, I'm going to stay in the relationship until my kids go to college. But when kids go to college, that's one of the hardest times I've learned that people, that the impact on kids is the worst because they're going out into the world and finding their identities and they don't have a place to come back to.
Right.
So they've had this whole foundation their whole lives and now they're out and it's like, I'm coming back to this fractured home where like, where do I spend the holidays? Or like, what do I do? And it's really, really, I mean, it's never a good time, but it's really hard for teenagers.
I can see how that would be very unsettling, right? You're out in the world and you expect to be able to come back to that place to recoup or recharge or any of those things. And it's gone. A place you want to avoid.
Right. Their foundation has shattered.
Right.
The other thing with that is staying in an abusive relationship till kids get older just makes them believe that this is normal and familiar. And no matter what you tell them about, oh, you know, this isn't healthy, don't do what I do, like that's what they will gravitate towards.
Oh, absolutely.
That has like a lot of impact.
Yes, that's one of our core things that we talk about, and it's modeling behavior. You know, it's you can't do the do as I say, not as I do, because that's not what happens. Kids are watching 24/7, right?
And absorbing. That's their belief system. They're like, this is familiar.
Yes.
This is what I'm drawn to.
Yep.
And tying those two different things together, having their belief system created understanding that, oh, this is how relationships work, and then going off to college and coming back not only to their foundation being shattered, but their whole belief system being shattered too. Because, wait, I thought this was a healthy relationship. Now you're telling me this whole time it wasn't.
Right.
Exactly.
And then that's not even taking into account, because you know we're going to do it. We all do it. Teens especially are going to do it. They'll internalize and take some sort of personalization. And
right. Yeah. And yeah, so they take some kind of blame on. And again, they're watching one parent also point the finger. It's because they can't look at their own blame. And so now you have a teenager who isn't fully formed, also feeling a little bit of that blame. And what they're being modeled to do with their blame is project it onto
with their guilt.
The person who's trying to set the boundaries.
Right, right. I mean, what's really common is, you know, one of the partners will tell the kids that the other partner is responsible. And, you know, it's interesting because when I was breaking up with my ex, and we were together for 20 years and married for almost 18, I mean, I was like terrified. I never thought that I would get a divorce because we didn't fight. It was more of a case of a completely duplicitous existence and mm-hmm. double life. So I was just like, how am I going to tell the kids? My kids were 11 and 14 at the time, but I was terrified. And so one of the things that someone recommended, I think it was my divorce attorney, I got him pretty quickly to figure out what to do. He said, go to an Al-Anon meeting. And for those of you that don't know what Al-Anon is, so AA is Alcoholics Anonymous. So those are meetings that alcoholics go to try to stop drinking and get healthy and just like live a different kind of life. It's much bigger than stopping drinking. But that anyway, that's beside the point. Al-Anon was started by the spouses of mostly the men who would go to AA meetings. They would be outside the meetings waiting for their husbands to come to leave. And I'm talking about like early 20th right. century, I think. And they realized that they would talk to each other. They had a lot of the same concerns. And one of the most difficult things was how to accept that they couldn't control somebody else's addiction and behavior. And how do you kind of emotionally detach mm-hmm. and still live with it? So Al-Anon was started for people who love somebody or are getting away from somebody who is an addict or an alcoholic. And sometimes people who are involved with narcissists are there too, because they're a family member and they're trying to deal with like someone else's behavior that's deeply affecting them and they can't make it stop. So mm-hmm. my divorce attorney said, go to one of these meetings. I thought, oh, well, it's because my ex has issues with substances and alcohol, but it was a lot more than that. And I remember, you know, being a mess and just saying, I don't know how to tell my kids like what's happening. And somebody said, well, you need to make sure you tell your kids the truth. Now, again, my kids were older, like younger kids, it would be a very different scenario.
Right. Right.
But they said, if you don't tell your kids the truth as to why you're separating, they are going to be, well, first of all, your ex is going to tell them that it's your fault, which he had been the whole time. Like, if you divorce me, you're breaking up the intact family and it's going to ruin our kids' lives. And that's what kept me there for so long.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The person at the Al-Anon meeting said, so your ex is going to do that. And he's going to paint the picture that you're the one destroying the family, you know, and that he's trying to come back and it's you who won't allow it to happen. But the second thing is, if you don't tell the kids the truth, when they find out later, they're going to be re-traumatized and they're going to have to rewrite their whole history. So that was really, really helpful to me in moving forward with the divorce and communicating with the kids. So I say mm-hmm. It really depends on the situation. Mine was specific and the advice worked well for us.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that we talk about when we're talking about the relationship as well, is let our kids see us be human, right? See mistakes, take accountability for mistakes, apologize, like work on adjusting behavior, like allow them to see the truth of our humanness. And so, yeah, very similar themes still.
Right. And to kind of further that, it's not just because when there's two sides to the coin, right? Like in these situations, it's not just a matter of saying, oh, this is the truth, but also this is my truth.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be yours. And it doesn't have to be, you know, my significant others or your fathers, your mothers, whomever the other party may be. But this is my truth that I'm going to share with you. And it goes back to also what you were saying about we can't control, right?
Right.
So we share our truth.
Right. So you talk about two of the things or three of the things that you're hearing from parents that's a problem going through this. How, the word combat comes to my mind, but I mean, how are they combating, or how are they dealing with this primarily? What are you seeing before seeking help? How they're kind of combating this attack, really, is all that comes to my mind.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, a lot of them, they're so exhausted from the legal stuff that they're just, a lot of them are overwhelmed. That's the top word we hear. But the stuff with the kids, they're just astonished. They can't believe that a child that they loved and protected and invested so much time and energy into is now siding with someone that abused them, and that the kid can't see it. Like, how can my kid actually believe that I'm that kind of person? So the other parent uses a number of tactics to try to alienate or separate this kid from we call it like the target parent. And I'm going to say some that come from a woman named Dr. Amy Baker, her model, because she has like a list of different ways that they do it. And as you guys know, we're developing this whole online course and our books about it, you know, more expanded. But one of the ways that I'll just say a toxic parent does it is they will send poisonous messages about the other parent through the child. And it's not always overtly. Like, for example, a lot of this starts while you're still in the relationship. They groom the child before it even ends. So I think about my own situation when my son was really young, and I would, you know, he would do something wrong, and I, being a teacher also, I would discipline him. I'd be like, "We, you know, that's not allowed. And now you're in trouble, and you either have a timeout or whatever it was."
Right.
And yes. I would discipline. And then my ex would come in and be like, "Oh, Izzy, you don't have to listen to mom. She's just cranky. Like you can take it back." So he was constantly undermining my authority with my son. And so my son was, he was basically teaching, like, you don't have to listen to women, to your mother, to authorities. And it became like a big problem, you know, as my son got older, because in his mind, he's like, oh, I can just take it back. Like, whatever I do, somehow, if I just say, I'm sorry, it's going to go away. And he's, you know, he's learned, he's had some life lessons with, like, you cannot take it back. And my ex-husband learned the same thing. There's things that are unforgivable. There's things that when you treat someone a certain way over time, like, they're done after a while, right? You know, so that's really tricky. So but back to the poisonous messages with teenagers and with younger children, one significant thing that we see is something I call the three U's. So they try to convince the child or the teen that the other parent is unsafe, unloving, or unavailable. And they'll make comments sometimes like, oh, even like very insidious, like minor things like, oh, here's your other parent. Oh, I can't believe they're on time. They're always late. Just like little things like that, that take root, like, and the child's like, why, you know, so things, that's an example of poisonous messages. Another way they do this type of behavior is blocking contact and communication. So, you know, when someone has their court access time and they're supposed to see the kid, sometimes things will come up. The parent, I'm going to do an interview soon with a woman named Marit, who founded something called Blended Family Frappe. And she just put out a newsletter that I was like, this is the perfect topic, about how people use extracurricular activities to alienate the child. And I'm guessing that she's going to talk about how people will be like, oh, our kids have this, they can't see you, because they're doing this activity. They can't see you. They can't see you. And then like the relationship starts to disintegrate because the kid's always busy with these activities. So blocking contact and communication, that's, you know, all these are like really big, but these are just some basic factors.
Right.
And I'll just give like one more. I'm not going to go through all of them, but another one is like undermining the other parent's authority, making the kid feel like there's one parent that's like the real parent and the main parent, and they're just going for visits with the other parent. You know, that's, you know, all these are really big topics, but those are some of the ways that one parent starts trying to get the child to separate from the other parent.
Yeah. And this is a really big deal, because what we talk about a lot is how kids take the words that they're hearing and they internalize them and they put their own meaning on it based on the lens and experiences that they've had. So it doesn't take a lot of input, because they're already internalizing and putting their own interpretation on the relationship. And now you have this influence that's feeding into your insecurities already. Right. So it's, I can imagine it does take a lot to kind of make this into an unbearable situation.
Right. And there's a whole system of like invisible rewards and punishments that happen. So when the child starts to reject, or the, I keep saying child, you know, I mean like teenager, starts to turn the other away, sometimes they'll, the original parent will, or not the original, but sometimes we say the preferred parent or the abusive parent will reward them and give, a lot of times they'll give them gifts, or they'll, you know, pay attention to them, because sometimes they don't pay attention to them unless they're bad mouthing the other parent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really subtle.
Which then teaches them, you know, if I want attention from this parent,
I need to
badmouth the other.
Exactly.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what kind of advice, or, I mean, I know this is something that we've talked about, but what are parents doing? Or if you had to say two mistakes, or two kind of like blaring, don't do this, right? As the non-preferred parent, and you're coming in and you're, you know, wanting to be like, this is no, you're other parent, I can't believe all the things that they're thinking about. What things do you see that don't work? Yeah, that are red flags.
Or like, ooh. Or maybe put you a couple steps back even.
Yeah, let's think about this. Yeah.
Okay, so you started actually getting into one of them, which is a natural response. So the kid comes back and says, mom or dad said you are, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, you're not paying for my college and blah, blah, blah. So the target parent is like, what? You know, that's not true. And so our instinct would be like, no, like, let me correct the record. Okay. Like, that's not what's going on. And here's what's really happening. So that's a mistake, because with teenagers want to feel like they have their own minds and their own thoughts. And so when one parent is telling them, this is how things are, and then the other, and we all think our parents tell us the truth.
Right.
So they hear this from one parent, and then they go back, and then the other parent's like, no, this is what you need to think. That other parent is doing the same thing. Both parents are saying, this is what you need to think. And a teenager just like, you are not being respectful to me. You're not letting me come up with my own conclusions. And I don't really care. I don't really care. I don't want to be involved in this.
Right.
So to try to convince someone what the truth is does not work. And it'll just make a child or a teenager just like shut down even more, because it feels like nobody's listening to me, which goes to the second mistake people make, is they don't seem to remember that child has all these, or the teenager has all these huge feelings, and they need someone to talk to about it. Like, they want to be heard. They just need to be listened to. They're angry. Right. And sometimes parents, they feel so guilty. They just want to suppress it. Like, okay, we're just going to do this and everything's going to be fine. Like, I have to make it perfect. That's a mistake, because it's not perfect, and suppressing makes things worse. So that's a couple of the mistakes that people make in these situations. There's so much guilt, you know, that people feel, but what kids need is to be able to get it out and not feel like you're trying to fix. You can't fix it.
Right.
You can't make it all better. And how you can help is actually be quiet and listen a little bit more.
Right.
Absolutely.
But we see a lot of the same themes, because.
Right. I knew.
We do. I mean, we'll talk about that a lot too, because I mean, this is, again, particular context where your kids are coming back because of the poisonous messaging. That's the phrase that you use, right? The poisonous messaging from the other parent, and saying, oh, you this. But there's definitely instances in any parent-child relationship where that can happen, just not to the same degree, right? And our natural, like you were saying, our natural response is to kind of defend ourselves and to say, no, that's not true. And fix it.
That is a theme we talk about with the mother-daughter relationship. And I'm sure it's every relationship, but mothers and daughters is what we know, right? We think as parents that we need to fix all the things, because we don't want our kids to feel the feelings that we felt, or we don't want them to make the mistakes that we made. And so we're out there fixing it all. And it sends a few messages. One, they're not capable of thinking through or fixing their own problems, mm-hmm. right? And two, we don't think they're capable of it. And then they also don't learn how to manage their emotions and learn how to work through things. And it's very similar to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Right. And then also the message too, that, you know, these emotions, the emotions that we want to try to like stifle, right, be like, no, it's fix, right? Rather than
we label the emotions.
We label them.
Yeah.
When they need to be embraced, validated, right? So we need like
heard
and just recognize as what they are and felt, instead of, you know,
dealing with what is, instead of trying to create a different scenario.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I knew there we had a lot of parallels between
them. Oh, gotcha. Absolutely. So you were talking about your new book and the new courses, and it really kind of dives into addressing this issue that these parents are having with their children. So let's talk about that a little bit. What kind of advice or what kind of things are you bringing into these courses, and how are you serving the community when they're coming to you with that third kind of child problem?
Okay, so this is perfect because we had a client earlier who has a very young child.
Okay.
And her daughter is 5. And they're dealing with a long distance custody issue. But she's, like all of us, a worrier of like, what's going to happen? Oh my gosh, I'm already seeing things that my ex is doing. And he's trying to alienate the daughter from me. And I'm reading this book and I'm getting really scared. I'm like, okay, slow down. Because just because kids are, first of all, whenever people get divorced or separated, it's natural for them to say nasty things about the other one. Like, that's normal. But the type I'm talking about is when it's a steady stream of negative messages with no positive messages. So not everybody whose ex makes nasty comments about them, it's not like the child's going to be brainwashed and right, turn against them. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is that certain kids are less likely to fall prey to this. And a lot of that has to do with the nature of the relationship you have with your child. And so that's why it's so important to cultivate like a really strong bond with your kids at any age. And it's not like it's too late if they're already teenagers. Like, there's always opportunities, we know, to improve relationships. Even good relationships can get better.
Absolutely.
So I think people worry that, oh my gosh, like I have a really difficult ex, and so therefore my kids are going to turn against me. That is not true. Like, there are so many things you can do right from the beginning. I think about my own situation and things that I was doing that come from what my dad did with me. And my parents have been married for like 60 years now, but just that I repeated with my kids, that I think helped build like a really strong relationship, that even as my kids were exposed to constant negative messages of me, and it's like 10 years and their father still sends stuff to one of them, an email, but they don't pay any attention to it. But like, the thing that my dad did when I was younger was he took a lot of walks with me. Like, we'd walk down and get the newspaper, we'd walk and get ice cream. And so we were always just had this casual like routines that we did together. And I always felt like he was there, you know, and we could talk to each other. And then with my own children, unfortunately, our dog just passed away. He was almost 15. He was a golden retriever. But throughout most of their life, he was there. And we, our neighborhood, the schools, like, you could walk to schools. So even in middle school, and then when in high school, they took a bus to another school, we would walk the dog together to the bus stop. So like every day we had this routine. And I'm not a cook, and so I don't do like family dinners. I'm sorry, everybody, but like, I just don't.
I'm with you. It's okay.
I would love go to restaurants, but I'm not someone like that could manage, especially with the situation with our family. Right. I couldn't manage like family dinners and getting together to connect, but taking those walks every day with the dog, that really connected us. And I think that established like strong relationships where, you know, they were less apt to believe the things that my ex said about me, because they knew me, we had our routines, and that really strengthened the bond. So that's something that I think parents should know, that there's all kinds of things you can do with your kids, even when they're being really hard, like teenagers, like awful. And, you know, I used to teach high school, so I know, like,
I've been there,
but they're still like, kids want more than anything, like they want your attention, and they also want to have control over the situation. And so one thing that I learned from a therapist that I interviewed, She's actually a child psychologist, and she and her husband do like from preschool through young adult with the school system. And she said that kids of any age, if you can spend like 10 minutes a day, and it doesn't have to be every day because a lot of our clients don't see their kids every day, but 10 minutes a day doing something that they want to do, you know, as long as it's within reason, because right. It shows that you care about something. Like, not even if you don't, like my son was into video games for a while, and like, I should have paid more attention and acted interested. I didn't. So I made that mistake. But if your kid is really into video games, even if you don't like them, you can spend 10 minutes and say, tell me about it. Like, what are you right. doing? And play with them, because that also establishes connection. So I think teenagers of any age, like just to know that you're there, and they might not want you around, but if you say, hey, can you show me how to do something? Like, you're really good at this. Like, I admire how you do this. Can you just show me? Can you help me? Can you help me cook something? Food is a good way to lure them as well.
Oh, gosh. Yes. It's a good way to lure most of us, I would argue. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
But the goal with the book and the courses is really for just like everything else that we do is we believe in empowerment through education. And mm-hmm. one of the things we deliver is actionable strategic advice that people can use and like immediately. And so we want to give, you know, we love interviewing experts like you and other people so that people can learn that they do have agency, that even though they're dealing with something horrible, it doesn't have to completely control everything. And there's ways to turn things around. It's not a life sentence.
Yeah. I love that.
I do too. I know, because that's
what we talk about. Yeah. It is exactly what we talk about, because right. We came onto the scene with our own struggle and mental illness. And when you're in that battle, or you're in the, you know, the thick of that, it feels like there's really no way out, or you can't imagine finding a way out, but there is, there's ways to, you know, navigate it and thrive. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar. Well,
that's why it's so important to have people who have lived through experiences like this and come out on the other side and tell the rest of you, like, you can get to the other side. It takes a lot of work. And along the way, it is just not fair. Like, bad things happen. We often say to our clients, you're not going to lose. Our people don't lose. You just give up too soon. So we don't want you to give up too soon.
Mm. Wow. And that, you know, so
why? That hits home. Yeah,
exactly.
And I just want to circle back really quickly to something else you were just saying, Lisa, about your relationship with your children, and how something that you regretted, the video games, but just spending the 10 minutes. Right. And that is a huge piece of something else that we talk about, and it's recognizing each other, like parent and child, but recognizing each other as individuals. And right. so as the, and I will argue that it's, you know, the parent's responsibility to show that initial investment and interest in
modeling
the behavior, right? Yeah. And they're in who they are as an individual, and not just who they are as your child, right? Mm-hmm. The mini me we'll get caught up in the, okay, the achievements outside looking in, right? Am I a good parent? I'm only a good parent if my child's done XYZ, kind of a thing. But showing that like interest in individuality will allow them to then turn around and, you know, show the interest in who you are
exactly
as an individual. Mm-hmm. And that is where, I mean, that's where the relationship, I feel like, starts to really expand, flourish, right? Yeah. Because it's not just, we're not just playing the roles now of parent-child. Like, I see you and you see me.
Right. I mean, they're an adult a lot longer than they're a child.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. That's true. Wow, I like that one. I might have to quote that one.
Okay.
Okay, so I guess, how can people get in touch with you?
So, super easy.
Yeah.
Just Google Been There, Got Out, and you'll find us everywhere. So we're on Instagram. Awesome. It's at Been There, Got Out with little underscores. We have a podcast. We have a YouTube channel. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. Pinterest, maybe.
I don't LinkedIn, know what it's called. Like,
okay. So yeah.
Like,
so,
everywhere. Our book is on Amazon.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'll put as many of all of those links as possible in the show notes for everybody too. So that you can very easily find Lisa and her husband.
Oh, wait, he's not my husband. He's my long-term partner. But
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
And her long-term partner.
I shouldn't even say it. I should just let it go because it's been like 9 years. But we always say we're living apart together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's okay. A whole other thing. Yeah. It makes it work really well, I think.
Yes. We say the same thing about the mother-daughter relationship, right? It's like, it's like, you know, untangle yourselves from each other and live your own lives, but
together,
but bonded.
Yes.
Together,
right? Yes. It yeah, works. So. It works so well.
It really, really does.
Awesome.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you so very much. This has been super insightful. And
well, eye-opening too, because you opened our eyes to a whole problem that mothers and daughters are dealing with that we didn't even have
our radars.
Yeah, it wasn't on our
radar. Wow.
Oh, I know. God. Is that crazy? Wasn't our lived experience. We weren't thinking about this. So I'm thrilled to be connected with you and to, collaborate further.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Looking forward to more happy, fruitful collaborations.
That's what it's all about. Well, folks, thanks again for listening to the Mother-Daughter Journey. Again, if you want to catch Lisa, the information will be in the show notes. Been There, Got Out. Go find her. And thanks again. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for joining us on our journey today. If you liked what you heard and are looking for more, make sure to leave us a review and subscribe to this podcast.
You can also follow us on social media. But for the most fun, go find us on TikTok at The Mother-Daughter Journey. See you next time.